You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
What about my question, Sam?
Huh? Oh, you mean the one about Hitler?
What would you do?
I don't like the sound of this, John. What are you getting at?
What would you do? Would you kill him?
All right. All right, I'll give you an answer. I'm a man of medicine. I'm expected to save lives and ease suffering, and I love people. Therefore, I would have no choice but to kill the son of a bitch.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got nerves!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 121 for the 26th of February, 2011. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm still good.
That's good.
Yes.
You're a little bit better than you were before, by the looks of it.
No, I'm still lying. but, you know, we're getting there.
If you've been listening to our Geek Action show, you'll know that Josh is not feeling at the top of his game, but we are going to go through anyway because the show must go on.
I'm fighting on anyway.
This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of GeekActually.com, and this week we are going to review the new, and I use the term loosely, thriller, Unknown, and we discuss a little film news, including the updates on Prometheus, the Ridley Scott film, and Preacher, the comic book adaptation. We also have a couple of Red Band trailers for you to have a look at. That's where we earn our explicit tag. And we also have a new list of five, which is five great thrillers. Because we are doing thrillers today, of course. And that opening clip, for those who are wondering, is also a great thriller, which is The Dead Zone, the Christopher Walken starring film by David Cronenberg. So I think you've only just discovered this film fairly recently.
Yes.
Yes. And we're going to talk about that right now because it's in our... What have we been watching this week, Josh?
Films?
Yeah.
What have we been watching?
What have you been watching this week?
I've been doing Dario Argento films this week. I've done...
Good timing. We have Dario Argento news.
Something Red?
Deep Red.
Deep Red, thank you. Deep Red and Tenebrae, which I will say are incredibly bad films. They have some really, really good things in them and really, really well put together moments. But as films, they are very messy. Though, do have rewarding amounts of cool gore.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, Dario Argento was known as probably the maestro of horror in his day. He hasn't fared so well in the modern age of horror. His last few films have been really awful. It's been very interesting to see what his new film is like, which we will talk a little bit later on. I didn't even know he was still making films.
Yeah.
And then I found out that he's got a new film on the horizon. I was like, oh, really? You're still... I wasn't even sure if he was still
alive.
Yes, but
then when you find out what the film is as well, you're like, really? Like, you know...
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, we'll come back to that in a minute. This week I've continued on with the mission of watching a movie a day, every day of the week. And I do apologize. My Tumblr account is way out of date in the sense I haven't put reviews or synopses up, but I have listed all the titles at least. So you can at least follow along with what I have been watching. I will go back and add in all the reviews and stuff. I just haven't had time. But I have been watching the films. And I've got to say, out of all the films I've watched this week, yes, I've watched lots of films as usual. But the one in particular, I happened to actually catch on cable. And I was sitting there and I was going, what am I going to watch tonight? And then this film came on. And I watched the first 5 minutes of it, and I said, okay, this has got my interest. I'll at least have a watch of it. It is an extraordinarily awful movie. It's called Dead Nine.
Dead Nine.
Dead Nine. And the story is basically nine people get abducted, seemingly at random, and handcuffed to poles in a room, and the killer basically says he's going to kill one person every 10 minutes until they tell him why they're there. And there is some sort of connection between all of them. And, of course, they bicker and moan and complain at each other for the first few times. And as people start to die, they start to realize maybe we should start to take this a little bit seriously.
Yeah.
Great premise.
Yeah.
Awful execution and absolutely atrociously terrible ending.
Yeah.
The most staggeringly bad ending I've seen on a film in a long time, to the point where it just ends. There is no, like, real ending to the movie. And you kind of go, okay, this is happening, this is happening. I don't give spoilers, but this is happening. And then the credits roll and you go, really? What? You know? So, yes, no, it was awful.
I've seen this kind of thing before, and it's always funny when you do see it. Mm. Because you're just like, that's where you were going with it before.
Yeah.
It's almost, sometimes you wonder whether someone ran out of money or something like that.
Or they didn't have any money to start with in the case of this film. I mean, this film, the biggest star and the headline star would have been Melissa Joan Hart, who, for those who know, was Sabrina on television. And now she's looking like a middle-aged housewife.
Very frumpy looking.
And she's got this continual sneer downward turn, and she's just shrieky through the whole thing. And you sit there and go, boy, you are awful. And in the opening credits of the film, it says, it's got the wonderful credit, it says, you know, all the names of the stars in it, and then it says, with Daniel Baldwin. And I went, wow, they really dragged him out of mothballs. And I'm watching the whole film going, all right, where's Daniel Baldwin? And I finished the film, and I never actually saw Daniel Baldwin in the entire movie. So I went onto IMDb and said, where the hell was Daniel Baldwin? And according to this, and I couldn't go back and rewatch it because it was on cable, but apparently there is a scene, and I do remember the scene, there is a scene where some cops at the very beginning of the film kind of are in the middle of a caper, and you see them kind of draw their pistols, and it moves away. No words are spoken. It's just a quick shot. Daniel Baldwin is one of those cops. So you sit there and go, why was his name even in the credits? You know, it's like, God. And James Melbourne says, was it worse than The Abyss? No, The Abyss is actually quite good if you watch the director's cut. The cinematic cut was awful. The ending of it was awful. It just didn't end. The director's cut actually tacks 25 more minutes onto it and actually makes more sense. So watch the director's special edition cut of The Abyss and you actually see the film as it was meant to be seen. Still kind of a dorky ending for what I thought was actually a really good film, but I thought the ending kind of let it down. But anyway, Dead Nine, awful. Don't see it. It's not even worth free on cable. It's just don't.
Wow.
All right. It's awful. In fact, possibly the worst movie I have seen in the last 5 years.
Dude, that's an intense place.
It's pretty awful. I will put my review up on it when I get a chance. Anyway, the other thing we thought we'd do, we're going to cut our What We've Been Watching segment just a little bit short because we actually have bigger news. Now, the Oscars are on this weekend. Now, for those who are listening to the audio podcast, you may have already had the Oscars. I'm not sure, depending on when you actually download and listen to this. But live, for American listeners, it is going to be on Sunday night. And for the Australian listeners, because of the time difference, it's Monday. Now, as usual, just to remind you, every year for the last couple of years, this will be our third annual, we do an Oscar wrap-up. What we do is we watch it live. Mm-hmm. We do get it broadcast live here on cable, which is in the middle of the day, and then we get together and we record a post-Oscar wrap-up, which, for our Australian listeners, you may not want to listen to straight away because it will be spoiler-filled and the Oscars are replayed at night. For our American listeners, it will be literally right after. We will go out live on this one. This will be the first one we do live. And then the podcast will come out the following day. So it's a little bit out of date by the time you get it, but it's just basically our thoughts on the Oscars, the wins, and the show in general. And Mirren will be here for that, which she's back in town. So Mirren will be doing it with me like she did last year, and possibly Little Geek as well. He did it with us last year as well. So it's just kind of a fun half hour, 45 minutes, where we just wrap up the Oscars and our thoughts on this year's Oscars. Now, the Oscars are a funny beast because they really don't reflect the best film. They really don't reflect the best actors. They are very political, but they are Hollywood's Night of Nights, and we kind of cover them, and I always watch the Oscars because they are kind of like our award show for movies, basically. Even, I mean, we got the Globes and we got all the other, but the Oscars are the night, you know? So we always do it. And so I thought, a couple weeks ago, we talked about Oscar predictions, and I said that as we got closer to the day, we would give our final predictions on the Oscars. Well, we can't get any closer than this. So I thought Josh and I would give our predictions. Now, we're not going to give predictions on every Oscar because, quite frankly, when it comes to the technical awards, the foreign language films, the short films, a lot of people haven't even seen some of these films that have come out. The ones that are really important are the big eight at the top of the head, which are film, director, actor, actress, supporting actor, supporting actress, writing original screenplay, writing adapted screenplay. These are the big ones, right? And so let's just give our final predictions on those, Josh. And I might even, do you want me to start off or do you want to start off?
You can start off if you want.
All right, I'm going to just fire up my notepad here. I've got notes on this. And I'm going to say that my first prediction will start with the actors, okay? My first is going to be for best actor. And I think it's a lock, quite frankly. I don't think there's any competition here. I think Colin Firth is going to walk away with it this year for The King's Speech.
I also have Colin Firth. Yeah. I have a feeling this won't be as long as you think it is, Dave, because I imagine how...
Well, I think, quite frankly, I've already said to Mirren, I think there's at least four of these Oscars I think are locks.
Yeah.
I think there's at least four of them where there is no debate. Everybody feels exactly the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Best actor is one of them. I think best actress can also be considered a lock. And I'm going to say Natalie Portman.
Yep. I've got that as well.
Now, Mirren actually disagrees.
However, due to predictive text, it says Natalie Postman.
Damn you autocorrect. Mirren actually disagrees with me about Natalie Portman. She thinks that because it's a cold performance, it might actually work against her in the Oscars, and they might surprise us with like an Annette Bening or something like that, because she's been getting a lot of buzz, Annette Bening, for The Kids Are All Right. I don't know. I still think Natalie Portman she won the SAG Award, which is a good indicator, the Screen Actors Guild Award. I think she's pretty much a lock.
What a terrible short analogy.
SAG.
Yeah, no, that's SAG. Terrible.
All right, so that's our actor and actress. Best Supporting Actor, I think, is also a lock. This is another one that I think is a complete lock, which I think is Christian Bale.
Yep.
For The Fighter. I don't think there's any debate at all with that. And Best Supporting Actress. Now, Best Supporting Actress is an interesting one because they either go for a newcomer or they go for one of the seasoned veterans who's getting on in years. It always goes that way.
Yeah, I know.
I think this year will be a newcomer, and I think it's Hailee Steinfeld.
Yep, I've got the same one.
Yeah, I think Hailee Steinfeld is going to take it.
Yeah.
Let's move to screenplays.
Yep.
I think adapted screenplay is a lock. I think adapted screenplay is Social Network. I think Aaron Sorkin is going to walk away. Now, the original screenplay is not so much of a lock.
Mm.
Now, I actually think this is the one major award that Inception will take.
I actually almost put it down, but the storyline, as it was criticized for a lot when it first came out, is kind of a collaboration of many other stories that have very much already been done.
Possibly,
So, like, I mean, again, like you say, it's one of those weird ones where I can't put a thing on. I've actually put The Fighter.
Is The Fighter an original or adapted, though? It's an original.
It's an original.
Okay.
I put it down because out of the stories and pulling on original material, basically someone's life and so on and so forth, it has that going for it. If it wasn't Inception, it'll be that. I'm going to put down The Fighter because that's my call on
that. Okay, that's fair. No, that's fine. But I think The Fighter is also a great screenplay.
I would love Inception to win. Yeah.
Inception does have the fact that it's a science fiction / thriller kind of film.
Taint.
And that's going to color it in the Oscars' eyes because they don't tend to win those sort of films.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess that just leaves us the big three at the top. No, the big two at the top.
Thank you. I've only got two left.
Best Director?
Best Director, I'll go first. I've got Black Swan.
You've got Darren Aronofsky?
Aronofsky.
I did weigh up Aronofsky, but I actually ended up thinking that David Fincher is going to take it.
You know what, though? This is one of the only ones on my list that I'm not pulling a political. I want it to win. Therefore, I'm hoping that if I think positively about it, it might
happen. Send those vibes, which leads us to Best Picture.
And Best Picture, I have Black Swan. And, you know, whether or not it walks away with it, I don't know. But again, that's another hopeful one. I adored that film. And you know that I love my thrillers and I love my psychological subject material. So with that, I can't want anything more than I want that.
Aronofsky and Black Swan have very good chances, but I'm actually going with Social Network.
Yeah.
I think no film has been talked about more than The Social Network this year, and I think there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be putting it on their lists, on their voting slips. I think Fincher and... you got Fincher, I think, was director. Aaron Sorkin is writer.
Yeah.
kind of fall
Cronenweth as Cronenweth as
a cinematographer.
You just have them in every category.
It kind of falls into that. You know, yeah. This is a film that everybody's been talking about, and I think that it's just a film that I think might just take it. And James from Melbourne is pointing out, will Black Swan be popular enough? That's the problem.
Look, again,
it's not everybody's cup of tea.
Again,
but
I don't usually do the Oscars. As I said to Dave, I'm putting a disclaimer on this. I don't usually do the Oscars. I did this because it's part of the show, and we will do it. I actually find them political, and I find them a waste of time, because realistically, the movies that I think put so much effort into it, and as a huge fan of science fiction and, you know, sort of doing things that are different from standardized filmmaking, I just find them that they always are just the same films, the ones that we knew were going to get picked anyway.
There are occasionally surprises or occasionally upsets. It will be interesting to see, because there's a couple of people who do really deserve Oscars this year, and they are nominated, but I just think they're in the wrong year, because there are certain people who are just going to take it off them, you know what I mean? Like Jeff Bridges was phenomenal, but he did win last year, and this year he's up against Colin Firth, you know? I think Colin Firth's a lock, quite frankly. Yeah. I think he's hit all the right targets for the Oscar. He's got a speech impediment. It's a classical film in the sense it's a period drama. Yeah. He's very popular amongst the Oscar. They thought he was going to win last year, and he didn't. It's got all the right markers heading towards it, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's our predictions. We'll find out on Monday, our time, whether we're right or wrong. And once again, you know, you can never really predict the Oscar, because it really does come down to politics and how well your film was marketed to the voters. So it's not always about the best film. Sometimes it's just about the best hype that the film can get. Lest we forget Gwyneth Paltrow winning for Shakespeare in Love. Oh, sorry, Shakespeare in Love winning Best Picture that year. And everybody said Weinstein's basically bought the win. You know, they spent so much money campaigning that Shakespeare in Love shouldn't have won the Oscar. But that's where everybody's mind was, because they spent so much. The other thing that we want to point out is that, as I say, the supporting actor categories are often newcomers or seasoned veterans, and either of those categories are really hard to predict. Best actor, actress are much easier than the supportings. The supportings are always very hard to pick, because that's often where things go kind of left field. Anyway, we'll see. We'll find out. And as far as the thriller category is concerned, the idea that the Oscars always basically have a blind eye towards science fiction and horror films and that sort of stuff, lest we forget the complete surprise. I think it was 1989 when Silence of the Lambs walked away with the 5 top Oscars. I mean, it literally swept the board. And everybody went, what? That is just not their kind of film at all, but it did. So every now and again, there is a surprise. You never know. And this is why it's kind of fun to watch it, because you just never know sometimes. Yeah. Anyway, we're going to move into our feature film review. And before we move into our feature film review, I do want to ask a question. This is something that's been mulling around in my head for a while, and I haven't even spoken to Josh about this. We used to do our feature film review at the end of the show. We moved it to the beginning of the show because we kind of felt maybe there were people who were only tuning in for the feature review and wanted to get to that first and get out of it. However, since moving the feature film review to the head of the show, we've lost our spoiler section, basically, because we don't want to put a spoiler section in and then people have to come back because they want to hear the news, for those who do. So the question goes out to our listeners. Send your feedback to feedback@geekactually.com. I want to know whether or not you want us to rearrange the show to put the feature film review back to the end of the show to include a spoiler section, or leave it where it is. Okay? The simple question, as many people as possible, we just need your answer. All you have to do is send me an email that says beginning or end. You don't have to write a long email. I'll understand. Okay? I know you're all busy people. So just beginning or end, and then, you know, we do it. Okay? All right, so chat room's already started to throw stuff in. Send me emails.
I will monitor that.
Yeah, so that way I can actually have a record of numbers, all right? Chat room all moves around so fast. Okay, because I actually kind of miss doing a spoiler section. And on a film like today, we really want to do a spoiler section, which we may do, and it's going to get a little bit confusing.
I don't think there's anything you can wreck with this film, but we'll come back to that in just a minute.
All right, let's do this review. I don't know how long this will go, because I think we pretty much have the same opinion of this film. Anyway, the film is called Unknown. It is directed by, and I'm going to massacre this name, I think it's Jaume Colette Serra, I think. I could be wrong on that. And it's written by Oliver or Olivier, I don't know if he's French or not, Butcher and Stephen Cornwell, based on the novel Out of My Head, and here we go again, it's based on the novel Out of My Head by Dieter van Kolwert. Kolwert. I don't know. I'm massacring these names. I apologize for the massacring of these names. It stars Liam Neeson, Diane Kruger, January Jones, Aidan Quinn, Bruno Gantz, and Frank Langella. Basically, the story is a man wakens from a coma only to discover that someone has taken on his identity and that no one, not even his wife, believes him. With the help of a young woman, he sets out to prove who he is. In a nutshell. That's the IMDb listing. I think you could probably get a little bit more in-depth than that, but that's pretty much it.
I don't think it's a good idea to get any more in-depth than
that. Yeah, I don't know if you want to get too in-depth on this film in general. All right, here's the trailer for Unknown, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about it.
Did you sleep?
No. I'll sleep at the hotel.
Welcome to Berlin.
Can you tell me what you remember?
I was in a taxi. I crashed. I don't know how I got here.
You have been in a coma for 4 days. We couldn't find any identification with you. What's your name?
I'm Dr. Martin Harris. I've been gone for 4 days. My wife is out there in the city. She doesn't know.
Excuse me, sir. Do you have an invitation?
That's my wife over there. Liz.
Do I know you?
What's wrong? It's me. Your husband.
Martin.
You are Dr. Martin Harris?
Last time I looked.
Is this some kind of a joke?
You know this man?
No.
Please.
Get him out of here.
Please. Please.
There are no rules with severe trauma of this kind. Memories get lost or fractured.
I'm not crazy. Somewhere there's proof I'm me. I was in your taxi. We crashed.
How did you find me?
I need to know what happened.
It's not safe for you. There are people watching.
They had me convinced I was crazy. But when they came to take me, I knew. It's a simple code.
These mean anything to you?
It's my wife's writing. They have passports, credit cards, family photos.
You really don't remember anything.
Get your hands off me!
Who are these people? They can become anyone.
The question is, why would they want to take your place?
I don't know who this man is. But you have to arrest him, or many people will die.
There is no Martin Harris. He doesn't exist.
I am Martin Harris. I didn't forget everything.
All right, first of all, let me just say that they actually give away everything in that trailer.
Pretty much, yeah.
So I don't know if we have to really even worry about a spoiler zone, because they do give everything away in that trailer. Anything that could have been at all suspenseful or big reveals, we've already seen. Hmm. It's actually a terrible trailer in that sense. It's a trailer where less would have been much more.
Yeah.
In that sense. Although, even with that being said, I'm not sure if that would have saved this film. Now, for those who are thinking that it looks like Taken 2, like us, it's not.
No.
It's nothing like Taken in any way, shape, or form. It is a spy thriller, essentially. And if you're going to equate it to any film that it has any sort of vague connection to, it would be more like The Bourne Identity than this. It's The Bourne Identity without the excitement.
Pretty
much.
Yeah, like, I mean, I rolled over at one stage and, like, leaned over and said that to you, where I was just like, I didn't know when in this movie he becomes... The big problem that I have with this film is that its pacing is just so messed up.
Mm.
Like, it doesn't know what it wants to be. It wants to be, like, four different kinds of thriller films, and it's trying to fit them all into one. It's got, like... It's got a kind of a languid pace at times, where it's very slow, and it's trying to sort of, like... spell things out really slowly, and then it will just launch into this action scene that just seems out of place, and then cut back down to nothing happening. And you're just like, I don't have time for this. I don't know what's going on.
The closest film that I can think of that I could equate it to in style, if not substance, would have been the Harrison Ford film made in the 80s by Roman Polanski called Frantic. Mm. You know, where he's kind of running around town looking for his wife and, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And Frantic was excellent. I really liked Frantic a lot. In fact, I should have used that on my list. But anyway, I thought Frantic was a really good film. This film kind of starts that way. And you kind of feel like in the opening scenes, oh, this could be kind of interesting. And then it just kind of goes nowhere. It doesn't, it just kind of drifts along at this weird pace. It is an interminably long film, and it's only 2 hours long. It's a little bit like how we felt about The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, in the sense that it's not really that long, but it feels long, and it never seems to end. They keep coming to resolutions, and then they keep going, and there seems to be more, you know?
Yeah, and look, it's no secret to anybody that regularly watches this show that I hate Liam Neeson, and I've finally, in this movie, come to terms with what it is. It's like every scene is like him reading the page, putting it down, and then just reading the line. Mm. There's no emotion.
And is it in his bad American accent.
Exactly, and it's part bad American accent, it's part that it's read like it would be read off paper. And it's like the only time he emotes is if there's a little thing above it saying, snarl angrily, or something like this, because there is no feeling to his emotions. It's just he's been given what he has to do, and he just does it. Mm. He's very predictable. His roles never have any sort of level of difficulty to them. They're always just stock standard information delivered at point. And I just think this role feels like it was supposed to be for a younger person.
Yeah, well, and that is evidenced by the fact that his wife looks like she's 14 years old.
Exactly.
And we've come to a point now, Hollywood, can I just make this point out, that Liam Neeson is now looking his age very much. And to cast him opposite January Jones as his wife just feels creepy. It just feels really odd, and there's a shower scene in it where they're in the shower together, and you kind of go, ooh, you're in the shower with your dad.
Can you even still get it up?
That's what the blue pills are for. it's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And the fact isn't helped by the fact that January Jones is a terrible actress. I'm sorry. People out there who watch Mad Men are going, oh, sacrilege. You know, Mad Men is perfect, and I could never really get into Mad Men. I'm sure it's a wonderful series. I just haven't been able to get into it. But in this, January Jones is awful.
Yep.
She is boring, insipid, and feels like she should be on the hills. She's just awful. But I will say one thing. I spent the entire film thinking it was Claire Danes. She looks just like Claire Danes. They could play sisters.
So.
It's a really creepy thing. I actually watched the trailer before we went to the movies, and I went, oh, it's got Claire Danes in it. I wasn't even looking at the credits. And then when she's on screen, I'm going, oh, it's Claire Danes. Boy, she's looking young. That's because it's not Claire Danes, you moron. Mm. But yeah, she looks very much like Claire Danes. Mm. But she doesn't act. Well, actually, Claire Danes isn't that good an actress either. But, you know, January Jones is awful. Mm. That's not to say this film doesn't have a couple of moments, a couple of things where it works. Diane Kruger is wonderful. And I love Diane Kruger. And she, ironically, is German in a film set in Germany, playing an illegal immigrant who isn't German. So I think that's kind of ironic. She does a really good job, and she is sexy as hell. And I think Diane Kruger is wonderful. And I also thought Bruno Ganz did a really good job. And for those who don't know who Bruno Ganz is, he was Hitler in Downfall, or the German title Der Untergang. And he is a fantastic actor who does a really wonderful turn in this film, but there's just not enough of him. And his character isn't used enough.
Yeah.
And so you sit there and go, wow, you know, it's great having you on screen and you're wonderful, but why are you here, you know?
You know what the other great thing is? I love the fact that it's almost like they, like at the end, they started realizing they didn't have enough time to wrap it up. Because things go so quickly in like the last 10 minutes. Cast members just get culled, and some of the resolutions happen so fast you don't get time to really understand or deal with them. It's like, one of the deaths, which we won't wreck because it's probably one of the only mildly surprising bits in the entire film, is literally killed and over after he delivers like 10 lines of dialogue. He's only in the film for like 3 seconds, and his resolution is just so final, and it's just like immediately they're on to the next adventure.
I think the moment the film changes pace, because up until that point, you're right, up until that point it's moving along at a snail's pace. And then you see it in the trailer, so it's not really spoiling. Frank Langella arrives,
yeah,
and basically delivers the entire plot.
Yeah.
In, like, one scene.
Dude, he is Basil.
he's Basil. He delivers the entire plot in one scene, and from that point onwards, it's like we're watching a different film now.
Can I ask, because, like, I don't know, I just want an opinion-based thing here. If you were in any sort of agency or any sort of spy-related thing or anything like this, would you deliver all of the information a character needs to know before you're off them? Like, I mean, I'm talking in anything. Bond-related.
This is one of those Bond-related tropes.
And no. But, I mean, some films can make it work, or maybe there's information they have to relay so that they can, like, get rid of them or something like this. This was just unnecessary exposition.
Well, this film actually had two moments in it for me, which were, and I'm going to give a small spoiler here, guys. I'm sorry. But, sometimes you have to. But a small spoiler would be that this film actually has the Looney Tunes trope, and it has the old 1966 Batman series trope. The old Batman series trope is that the bad guy says everything to the good guy before trying to kill him,
yep.
Right? Lay it all out in the line. This is what all the villains would do to Batman while they had him tied above, a shark tank or something like that. They would tell the entire plan, and of course then Batman would get free and... Yep. would solve the crime, because he's been told what the crime was. The Looney Tunes trope is you have amnesia. Because you got a knock on the head. So you get knocked on the head again, you get your memory back. And this film quite literally has the Looney Tunes trope. In the last 2 minutes of this film, he gets a knock on the head, and all his memories come back.
It suffers from one more thing that I have a huge problem with, which is the fact that in this film, there is a point where the character relearns his ability to fight, which you saw in the trailer. Now... anyone that knows anything, and Bourne did it perfectly, the reality of this is muscle memory doesn't go away. If you have learned martial arts, like in the Bourne films, even if you lost your memory, you will still know how to take someone down because it's a flow, it's an effort, it's something like this. The fact that this guy goes from like super agent to like moron and then back again just seems really unlikely.
But conveniently, and this is the fault of the script, conveniently, he does seem to have muscle memories when it comes to driving a car.
Yeah.
Because he has this wonderful car chase, and as soon as he gets in the car, he's like a Formula One driver, and you sit there and go, why can you remember that, but you can't remember how to fight? And you've had your ass kicked several times so far in this film. Mm. And you sit there and go, something wrong with the entire structure of this script. All right. And this is one of the first problems with the film. Second problem is Leslie Nielsen, Liam Neeson is sleepwalking.
Mm.
He is sleepwalking his last couple of roles.
Dude.
And part of it is the fact that he's not very good and not very comfortable doing an American dialect, and for some reason, they continually cast him as an American. There is no reason in this film whatsoever that he is American.
No reason he needs to be.
He could have been from anywhere, and they could have let him speak with his natural accent.
Absolutely.
And maybe we would have got... Remember, why do I keep calling him Leslie Nielsen? Liam Neeson actually has delivered good performances in the past. If anybody's seen Rob Roy, he's very good in Rob Roy. He's very good in, what is that, what's the one where he's the Irish protester guy? Michael Collins, is that what it's called? Collins? Great film. And, once again, he is really good in that film. Let him speak with his natural voice. You might get something out of him.
Yeah.
But here he is literally sleepwalking. And realistically, so is Frank Langella. I love Frank Langella, but Frank Langella really has nothing to do in this film. I really like Diane Kruger. She really has nothing to do in this film. There's nothing to make her stretch. Once again, Bruno Gantz is in it for literally, blink and you'll miss him, right? And so you sit there and go, really? It's just a long film. And it's predictable. All the way through it, you're kind of picking it up. And, quite frankly, this is not a spoiler because it's at the very beginning of the film. If he is such a super spy before he loses memory, and if it is so important, as it turns out to be, there is no way he would have left his briefcase behind. No way he would have left that briefcase
behind. And there's no way his wife would have been like she is at the start of the film.
No.
Just being like, just leave it. Just leave. Just let him do that. It's like, no, you guys are like super spies.
Yeah.
You don't just hope the guy's going to pack your stuff.
And this thing has been planned months in advance, as they said. It's, you sit there and go, there's nothing left to chance.
Yeah.
Nothing left to chance. So you sit there and go, it's built on an implausible premise to start with. And can I tell you, the worst ad for BlackBerry I've ever seen. He is in downtown Berlin and can't get a signal on his BlackBerry.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that equation? So every step of the way, it is trope upon trope upon trope, and you sit there and go, there's real problems here. You know?
And the other thing that I loved about this film is I was physically, like, letting off steam while I was watching it, because there were certain moments where, as a regular film watcher, and you try, you really do, because thrillers will have plot holes. Like, there's a lot of thinking involved. They're thinking movies.
Yeah, and I love a good thriller.
Exactly, yeah. And like some, you can let things go, but it's kind of like as you're going through the film, the more of these things that start to not add up, and the more plot points that they screw up, it's kind of like you almost have to vent stuff out of your mind so that you can continue watching. Where you kind of get to the point where you're like, I'm just going to let all of this go because I'm so lost right now. There's so many points where it's like, well, that doesn't make sense. Well, why would he do that? Because if you're going to do that, you would do this.
And I was about to say, the first trick with this film is you cannot look in depth at all.
No, you can't turn everything.
In
that
fact,
is
you're
your
better
off
watching this movie facing the opposite direction, because if you at all look at this film, you start finding the holes. It's got like Swiss cheese, yeah. And you can start just driving buses through those plot holes, you know. Yeah. And you sit there and go, really? But what? But you know, all the way through it. And I'm not going to spoil what it is, but quite frankly, it has one of the most stupid MacGuffins, I think. After all is said and done, when you find out what it's all about, you sit there and go, really?
Yeah.
Really? And I'm sure it is important, but it doesn't make for a good movie plot.
And it still doesn't explain exactly who the people are or why they would be, like, and who they work for, and is it an independent firm or is it a government firm? It's like, there's so much left unexplained that you're just kind of like, this is such, like... It really is. It's like a Looney Tunes cartoon or something. It's like there's not enough explanation to make you feel like there's any
in
ground
part,
into
and
it.
Then too much explanation on other stuff, and that's the problem. Yeah. James from Melbourne has summed it up. He says it's like dropping stitches in a jumper. Before you know it, you end up with a scarf with big holes. And it's very much. Do you know what it feels like? Look, as a person who has written screenplays, you write a screenplay first draft with your heart, right? You don't look at mistakes. You don't look at anything like it. You just pump it out, right? In the second draft, you go through and you tighten it up and you go, this doesn't make sense, this makes sense, fit this, fit that, and pull it all apart, right?
James, Space Jam is a kid's film.
And Space Jam, look, Space Jam doesn't have as many plot holes as this.
No.
Space
Jam's a relatively simple plot line, actually.
Yeah,
it's,
I think Space Jam actually kind of... put it this way, I always review films on saying, did it succeed in achieving what it set out to do?
Or did it do the number one thing that a film should do, which is suspend disbelief?
And entertain.
Exactly.
You know? The problem is that when you do a film like Unknown and don't succeed at setting up your own internal logic and world, then you don't buy into it.
Yep.
You've got to buy into it. You can make the most fantastical film in existence with completely fantastical characters. Oh, let me think. Star Wars or Lord of the Rings or any of these things. As long as it maintains its own internal logic, as long as it doesn't break the rules of its own world. It doesn't have to follow our rules, as long as it doesn't break its own rules. Unknown breaks its own rules all over the place, and that's the problem, is it doesn't have any internal logic. It is like they wrote a first draft from their heart and made it. They didn't bother going back and saying what doesn't work. And that's the problem. And now, it sounds really harsh. Everything we've said sounds really harsh. And I gotta say, the funny thing is, I didn't hate the movie. I didn't hate it. It's not like I got angry at it or anything like that. I sat there and watched it and went, peh. You know, and that's the problem, is it's just so meh, right? It's just, I didn't hate it. I didn't like it. It's just one of those films where you sit there and go, I just felt like, well, that was a bit of a waste of time, you know? It was like, you know, that was just not what I wanted. I wanted something that had a little bit more depth to it. And the trailer kind of makes you feel like you're in for a good spy thriller, and that's not kind of what you get.
Yeah.
So I was just, it's one of those films where, as Josh and I have said many times, bad or good, don't be mediocre.
Yep.
And this film is decidedly average in every way.
Absolutely.
And that's pretty what it comes down to. Josh, recommend it to a friend?
Absolutely not.
No, me either.
I wouldn't even recommend this one on DVD. It's like there's not enough in this film to make me ever want to show it to anyone.
The only reason I would say at all, if you want to see this film, is that Diane Kruger is radiant and Bruno Ganz is kind of fun. But really, this is something you get for free down on television or something like that. Don't pay for this. Don't encourage them to make more. All right. It's
otherwise we'll get sequels and then,
and unfortunately it's already done good money in the States. So, you know, we're probably going to see more, but I would have expected more from Joel Silver, quite frankly. Joel Silver, the Uber producer who produced this film, he did produce it with six other people or something, I noticed. So it wasn't his film entirely, but I would have expected more from Joel Silver. This is the man who has brought us Lethal Weapon, Die Hard, Matrix. You know, he's a better producer than this material.
Yeah.
Is all I can say. All right. That's unknown, guys. So, as I say, our question, please answer by email if you want to move the review to the end, because, boy, we could have really ripped into some details on this film. There's some great scenes in this we could have talked about. Let's talk a little bit about entertainment buzz, what's going on in Hollywood, what's going on in the movie industry around us. And I will say that we have a new trailer for a film that I had never heard of until this week. It is a Red Band trailer, so I warn you, the language is very saucy and it's not safe for work. Now, Josh and I have bagged out Cameron Diaz nonstop, I think, for the last year, basically saying, get over cute, you're not cute anymore, and it just doesn't work. And Big Mouth, right?
Giant mouth.
And so we've really bagged out on her. Now, her new film... Oh, there goes the studio phone. You know what? Without fail, it goes off all the time. Anyway, we'll just ignore it. There it goes. Without fail, no, that's not what I'm saying at all. That was the phone. See, the phone's distracted me now. I was about to say, this film I saw the trailer for and I went, oh my God, it's a Cameron Diaz film I want to see. Mm. It doesn't hurt the fact that it also has Jason Segel, who I really like, and it also has Justin Timberlake, who I really like. Mm. And it's directed by Jake Kasdan, who directed the movie Orange County with Jack Black and Hanks's son. I forget what his first name is, but Hanks's son, which I actually really liked as well. And Jake Kasdan, for those who don't know, is Lawrence Kasdan's son. Lawrence Kasdan is a geek favorite. He wrote Empire Strikes Back and Raiders of the Lost Ark and directed films like Silverado and Big Chill. So there's pedigree behind this film. And I looked at this film and I just went, okay, I'm in. I'll watch this just because it's Cameron Diaz not being cute. It's Cameron Diaz being quite a bitch, actually. And
first half I'm in, second half I gotta say, look, I'm not as in as Dave is, but I have met school teachers like this, so yeah, I'm interested to see it just for that alone.
And as a ex-school teacher, these are all the things I've always wanted to do. All right, so here you go. This is the trailer for Bad Teacher.
Are you excited for tomorrow?
Is tomorrow Saturday?
No. It's the first day of school.
Fuck my ass.
Ooh. Elizabeth, you shouldn't be teaching. I mean, I can't think of anyone less suited to being a teacher.
I don't need a blackboard or a classroom
to set an example.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Oh, shit!
What do you want?
Is that marijuana?
No, it's medicinal marijuana.
Oh. Feel better.
Hey, Elizabeth, can I like grab a bite sometime?
You still a gym teacher?
I am, yeah.
Fuck off.
Awesome. This went great. All right.
From now on, my full-time job is finding a guy who's going to take care of me.
Hi there.
Scott Delacorte.
Elizabeth Halsey.
On the new sub.
How the watch? Is that a Jaeger LeCoultre?
The family business.
I love how his eyes sparkle when he smiles.
I want to sit on his face.
So, did you and your wife just move to town?
I'm not married. I actually just got out of a relationship. She has such a big heart.
Enormous.
If I got a new pair of tits, he'd be all over me. But they're really expensive, you know, per tit.
Yeah, and you gotta get two of them. Who knows? Maybe you'll win the bonus. Oh, fuck!
What bonus?
For the state test. Whichever teacher has the highest scoring class gets a bonus.
Things are about to change around here. Recess is over.
We're having our car wash this weekend. Last year's car wash raised $6,000.
Let's do this. Holy shit.
Lauren Risman's dad called. He said we should have a car wash every weekend.
That's bonkers!
Now who has the answer to my question?
You,
Chubbs.
I don't know how to say this. I'm kind of nervous. I'm crushing on someone.
I think you're pretty great, too.
Thanks. It's Amy.
I don't think that you're Amy's type.
Really?
She hates cock.
Oh.
Whoa! Wait!
Twilight, what do we talk about in class?
Don't throw at her. Throw through her.
motherfucker.
Sign my yearbook.
Hold my ball sack.
Okay, so there you go. There's Bad Teacher. Now, I don't think it's going to be a perfect film by any means. And there is kind of derivative. There was a film that came out with Billy Bob Thornton 2 years ago called Mr. Woodcock, which actually did things like the medicine ball throwing and stuff like that already. So I don't think it's completely original, but I think it's got enough in there that it's got me interested. I want to see it. Mm. And once again, Red Band trailers are, Josh and I were discussing this before, I tend to feel like Red Band trailers are an excuse for them to say fuck and do things that they couldn't normally do in a normal trailer, and it doesn't always work out of context of the film. And it's the same thing I had a problem with the Your Highness trailer, if you remember. I thought it was actually really stupid, because the guy's saying, hey, fucker, and all this, and it's just not funny. I'm sure in the context of the film, it's probably funnier, but it just doesn't work. And I just wish they wouldn't use Red Band trailers just as an excuse to throw out lots of swearing and stuff just because they can, you know? Yeah. Still show it's a good trailer. But anyway, that's enough on that. So there is, remember, all of the links for anything that we talk about, these videos and so forth. In fact, that particular trailer is actually up on geekactually.com, but the link for it is also in our show notes. Mm-hmm. Now, Kevin Costner, who is not actually a huge favorite of ours. He's done some okay stuff, but he's not a huge favorite of ours. He's in the news this week because apparently he's been cast as Pa Kent, or Jonathan Kent, in the new Superman movie. Can I call a time out here for a minute and say they told us it was not an origin film.
Yeah.
So what the hell is Pa Kent doing in it?
Well, maybe it's going to be just like a small amount of thing. They're not dead, are they? Maybe he goes
he
like,
is.
To see them.
No, Pa Kent died. He had a heart attack. The whole point was it was actually Pa Kent dying, which is kind of one of the things that moved him on. Because remember,
well, maybe they're not following that storyline.
He always dies. He's dead in Smallville. You know, it's like Pa Kent dies. Anyway, flashbacks, says Calisynth in our chat room. Possible, possible. Mm. Now, the next question is Kevin Costner?
Yeah, well, look, I'm not hating on Kevin Costner. I've been waiting for him to do another film since I saw Mr. Brooks, which he was awesome in. And ever since I've been like, well, show me you can do that again. And that's what I want to see.
Fair enough.
So I don't know. I'm not hating on him right now. He's off my list.
I'm not hating on Kevin Costner. I think he's not quite the right choice because Pa Kent was supposed to be like the avuncular, you know. Is that the word I'm looking for? The calm rock in his life, and Kevin Costner doesn't have that feel to him, you know? He doesn't have that father Pa Kent feel.
Well, yeah.
But then again, neither does John Schneider in Smallville, so and Dukes of Hazzard boy, you know? Anyway, I don't know. Something about the Zack Snyder Superman is not sitting well with me at the moment.
Yeah.
And anyway. We'll move on.
Enough on that because I want to hear more news about Prometheus.
Okay, Prometheus, for those who remember, is Ridley Scott's new film, which started life as a prequel to Alien. Mm. And then they turned around one day and said, actually, we don't want to do a prequel to Alien because we've come up with an original story and this is so much better. But some of the DNA strands kind of feel like a little bit like the Alien thing. Well, it's getting more and more Alien by the minute because according to an article that Slash Film put up, they are actually gearing up to have a gigantic animatronic character, which they're actually thinking might be the space jockey from the first Alien film. So that's one thing. And it also says here that it's very possible that you'll be seeing the alien in Prometheus. So we'll probably, I think it's more of a prequel than they're actually letting on.
I think maybe it's been a rewrite. Maybe they've written the story characters and stuff like that from this apparent movie they were going to do that doesn't include the space jockeys into the world. So maybe the humans end up running into these. So it's kind of like the collaboration of
both
stories.
I'm really curious about this film.
But it also screams of a film which is really trying to appease the fans, which worries me because we've seen how this goes with things like Wolverine.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Now, it is also interesting to note that H.R. Giger, or Giger, depending on where you're from, is back on board, and he is designing the stuff. So,
The man probably, you know, it's nice to go back and sort of, you know, work on something you've done before.
Well, so there will be a continuity as well, which will be nice as well, from the first Alien to this film, because Can I just tell you, H.R. Giger scares the crap out of me. He is a sick, twisted little man. You know that? Yeah. I'm not talking about his work. His work, I think, is inspired. I think his drawings are amazing. But he is a creepy little dude. I saw a documentary on him once.
Yeah.
And his whole house is like that bio-organic shit. And he lives with his mother still. And it's like, there's something really odd about this little weird man, you know? Yeah. But he scares the crap out of me. But his work is good. So, we'll come back to the trailer in a second because we've got another trailer which we're going to show you. But first of all, I thought we'd just talk a little bit about our Dario Argento. Dario Argento, as we said at the beginning, is a really hit and miss director. He was very big in the late 60s, early 70s. Suspiria and Tenebrae and Deep Red and all these films are considered classics, quote unquote. Now, he really hasn't. I think his last decent film was probably Opera. Which was in the 80s. Okay. I don't think he's done anything.
He did a really good episode of the Master of Horrors.
That's true. Yes. Well, Master of Horrors is a great training ground for bringing them all kind of back. But now it looks like he is going to direct a new feature film. And this one kills me because it's called Dracula 3D. It's going to be in 3D, obviously. And it's going to star Rutger Hauer as Van Helsing. I'm in, man.
I'm going to watch that. I think Rutger Hauer really needs some more screen time, and he needs to kind of reestablish himself as an actor. I mean, you know, he's been known to be not the nicest of people.
I think he needs rehab, but that's beside the point.
But look, I mean, like, he was in Sin City, if everybody remembers, he was the priest, and then he was also in Batman Begins. These are incredibly small parts, but they are big movies, and he plays these roles fine, so... Yeah.
I love the fact Slash Film, and you can read this, we've got the link to this article in our show notes, but who was it actually wrote this? It was actually Russ Fisher at Slash Film actually wrote, "I can't not watch a new Dario Argento film, even though I know I'm likely to be disappointed."
Yeah.
No. And I think that's the key to it. You can't not watch it. It's Dario Argento. This is the man who inspired, this is the man who put George A. Romero on the map. He's the man who is like the godfather of horror films.
Of gore.
I mean, this is the man that he was the head of that whole Italian horror resurgence of the 70s. And that doesn't mean he's good though.
He was there, and I mean, like, you've got him on one hand who is the man. He is very creative. If nothing else, he is a great kind of, he's almost like an unofficial producer character kind of a thing. It's like he creates these great ideas and he you know, works through everyone below him that sort of takes from stuff.
And
he's
I'd actually
done.
Say, as a producer, I think his work is better than as a director, because he produced Dawn of the Dead.
Exactly.
He produced Demons.
Yep.
You know, and you sit there and you look at it and go, these are better films than the films he actually directed.
Exactly. So you've got those. And then on the other side, you've got the guy who brought us Blind Justice, like James was saying in the thing.
Rutger Hauer. I love Blind Justice. It's such a corny film. But I just loved
it's
it.
It's awesome.
It's awesome. I had so much fun watching it. I saw it at the cinema back in the day, and we came out, we were laughing the whole time. You know?
Yeah, dude, it's great.
And whenever we start to doubt Rutger Hauer, all you have to do is go back and watch Blade Runner again.
Oh, man. You know? No. And you know what? Such an inspired performance, considering the man's efforts lately.
If you really want to remind us as to why we actually like Rutger Hauer, even though his latest stuff has not been stellar, is you go back to Blade Runner, and you go back to his early Paul Verhoeven films that he was in while they were still in Holland, before they all came to America. He was in Soldier of Orange, which is a brilliant World War II film, you know? And he was in a strange little erotic drama called Turkish Delight, which is just bizarre. Once again, directed by Paul Verhoeven. And you sit there and go, there is something in the man, you know? He is an eccentric. He's always been an eccentric. And I think what happened was his being an eccentric was then mixed with probably too many Hollywood drugs, and Rutger Hauer became what he eventually became. But it's nice to see him trying to come back. Now, I haven't seen it, but I've been told Hobo with a Shotgun is out of its tree, and I really want to see this movie. I've got to get around to that at some point. All right, so Dario Argento is back. Dracula 3D. I'm there. You know, it's probably going to be crap, but I'm there.
Let's do it.
All right, so we've got, actually what we'll do is we'll save, because we did that trailer, we'll save that trailer to the end of the news. We'll do one more story, and then we'll do this trailer. Story is, this is kind of the sad news of the day. We've been talking for the last year about an adaptation of Preacher, which is this graphic novel that Josh used to rave about. And I finally got around to reading it. And it is. It's good. It's very interesting. I think the first half of the series is much stronger than the second half of the series. Mm-hmm. But it is unique.
And it's unique to its format.
It's unique to its format. It's dark. It's got some really out there concepts. And it's if you were going to make it into a film or television show, it's going to be a hard one to do. So you give it to somebody who's really talented and who might actually connect with the material.
Or just take it to a place, like, it's dark subject material. You have to have a good sense of humor. You have to be not afraid to push boundaries. You have to really understand that the characters are what makes the series. You could watch them do anything. You could watch Tulip shoot anyone. You could watch Jesse. You could just watch this man do whatever he does.
I gotta tell you, the casting of Jesse is going to be really hard.
Jesse is, and he's such... He's everything that is good about people. Like, you know, he makes mistakes and he's not perfect, but in essence, this character is just always trying to do the right thing. And that's essentially where the whole concept of the name, like the whole preacher thing comes from. It's like from Day Dot to the end of the series, Jesse is out to do the right thing and he's not out to fuck anyone over that doesn't have it coming.
For those who don't know what the story of Preacher is, it's kind of complicated, but in a nutshell... Basically, God has skipped out of heaven, and nobody knows where he's gone. Mm-hmm. And there is an entity that is as powerful as God, would you say?
He is as powerful.
He's basically also escaped, and he's gone into the brain of Jesse, a preacher from Texas.
Yeah.
And so now Jesse has what's called the Word of God, basically. Yeah. He can actually, with a vocal command, make anybody do anything.
Yeah.
And Jesse is so mad at God for abandoning things that he's now on a quest to find God.
And bring him to justice. Which is fantastic. The one bit we've left out, and probably the thing that makes the series the ultimate part, is Jesse is not exactly a good preacher.
No, he's a boozer, womanizer.
Yep. that's one thing he's not, is the fact that he has it
that's
in for
true.
The one girl, the love of his life. He is a boozer. He is a violent kind of person.
He swears. He's got this very odd moral code. Let's put it that way. And he hangs out with his girlfriend, who is a hit woman, and his new best friend, who is a vampire. So
the story is bizarre and out of its tree. And yes, it is quite an expansive storyline that goes to some very bizarre places and throws out some very interesting morals.
Right
now.
Now, the bad news on all of this is that they've been trying to bring this to screen for some time. Directors have come and gone. There's been some we've gone, maybe. There's been others who we've said no. It at one point was going to be an HBO series, which we kind of thought that if you're going to do it, this might be the way to go. Mm. But now it looks like it's headed for the big screen. And director DJ Caruso, who, for those who don't know, the quality of DJ Caruso is the man who directed Eagle Eye, and recently at the cinema, I Am Number 4, which has been called Twilight for Boys, right? He is not a quality director. He is an above-average action director who really doesn't know how to pull stories together.
Yep. This film is going to star, Nicolas Cage as Jesse.
Personal favorite of his would be Shia LaBeouf. It'll have Shia LaBeouf in it.
No, he's too young. Doesn't
that ever stop DJ Caruso?
Hey. No, this is my... That'll be that, and then you're going to have Edward for Twilight as the vampire, and you're going to have...
And January Jones as the girl.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And that'll be your casting, and we will actually destroy the world over this.
Do your impersonation of David Caruso's career. It's my turn! Sorry, thanks, Joseph Melbourne. Now, if you are in any doubt, sister, because there's been a lot of talk about him coming and going from this project... Caruso himself tweeted this week, and his tweet read, "My deal just closed on Preacher, going back to the dark side and pretty fucking pumped."
Yeah. Well.
Now, his only other voyage into the dark side that I can think of would have been Disturbia, which was essentially just a ripoff of Rear Window. So
a bad ripoff of Rear Window.
So the teeny bopper version of Rear Window. So this is not good news, Preacher fans. And I would actually say to you that if this thing does hit the screen, people who are fans of the comic book may want to stay away. People who have not read... What's he say here? Hey, you, Uwe Boll is a genius, light years ahead of his time. James!
Like, the only one thing that does actually, for me, that it has mildly going for it is I think when he means he's going back to the dark side, I think he's talking about his time when he was working on The Shield.
Oh, did he direct The Shield, did he?
Yeah, he did quite a bit of The Shield. So, look, no, he did a couple of episodes here and there, but they were not bad episodes. I think it's one of those things where the man has kind of got sort of a producer's movie kind of always going. Like, that's the kind of movie you get. You get the movie that has the stars that it needs and the money that it needs and the stupid level of special effects. It's like, Preacher's going to be a mission for this guy to get started, because we've seen how long it's taken to get off the ground. Look, I mean, it's going to come down to everything else. We've seen movies survive worse.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, this is, it's the kind of film where no matter what you do, it's going to get screwed up, in my opinion. It's a bit like The Watchmen. It's like, as much as it was a good film and as much as there was love put in from every aspect they could, I still think it is absolutely terrible in comparison to the comic book.
Yeah, I think it's got disaster written all over it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm not the Preacher fan that you are, but I can still say I think this has disaster written all over
it. Exactly.
Bad vibe, man. Bad vibe. All right, let's wash that bad taste out of our mouths with a trailer. Now, here's an interesting one. This is, we played the trailer for this a few, several weeks ago now, actually. It's the new film with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. It is directed by Mottola, who, what's his first name? Greg Mottola, who directed Superbad. It is the film Paul, about two losers who find an alien in the middle of the desert, and it's a comedy, as we might know. And I remember when we showed that trailer, I was kind of lukewarm on it, and I kind of went, I don't know. And I feel kind of sacrilegious almost for saying that, because I love Simon Pegg and I love Nick Frost.
Mm.
The alien's voiced by Seth Rogen, who is hit and miss with me, but, you know, when he hits, he's quite funny. This is the Red Band trailer. This is the official Red Band trailer. It came out this week. Once again, it suffers a little bit from Red Band trailer-itis, which is, let's say, dirty things just because we can.
Yeah.
But I have to say, after seeing this trailer, I'm a little bit more interested in this film. And I think one of the reasons I'm a little bit more interested in it is because there's a little bit more Jason Bateman in this trailer. And I really like Jason Bateman. So have a look at this. This is the Red Band trailer for Paul.
Ruth Boggs?
Who is this?
Please listen to me. You've been abducted. And the individual that you're traveling with is highly dangerous.
Oh, no, he's not dangerous. I mean, he's kind of rude.
Hey!
It's probing time.
This man is Peter's pants.
I want everything you can remember.
He curses a lot.
Yo, fuck nuts! Reese's Pieces!
Thank you!
And a couple of times I've seen him scratch his
spaceman balls.
He showed me things.
Just talking about his spaceman balls.
From the Earthling who directed Superbad.
Zoil, what the fuck is happening?
He's gone.
Looks like he hitched a ride, too.
I don't want to hear from anybody until he's dead.
Guys, this is too dangerous. I can make it on my own from here.
We are in this together, Paul.
Why are we holding hands?
So we look like a family. Okay, we're just a couple of regular guys walking down the street with a small cowboy.
And the humans who starred in Shaun of the Dead.
Have you gentlemen seen anything unusual this evening?
And Hot Fuzz.
You guys partake?
I'll partake.
It's pretty strong shit. I get it from the military, actually.
We should cook up some sausages.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, I have wasps in my brain!
That happened to me the first time. Let's lighten the mood, shall we? Clive, when did you last get laid?
On March 18th, Tiny Little Alien.
Pretty good.
Whole lot of trouble.
Spaceman balls.
Get your goddamn hands off my motherfucking junk.
It's in there! It's in there!
Paul!
Go, 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 go!
Yeehaw!
Your dick is gone.
Jump, jump!
Poor little thing.
Just watch.
It's a miracle. Why would you do that?
I'm not going to eat a dead bird, am I?
Paul. See more at whatispaul.com.
All right, so there you go.
I'll watch that. That looks mad. It looks so dumb. But
it does. It looks like a really stupid film with really juvenile humor. But I gotta say, Jason Bateman slapping that
guy—it's just a huge open palm slap. It's not even a light one. It's.
I like this. I like that, and I like Kristen Wiig. I got wasps in my brain. Yeah, that happened to me first time.
Yeah, we've all had that happen. That's great.
So, as I say, you can watch all of these trailers. I've actually got Paul and Bad Teacher embedded at Geek Actually on various posts. And if you don't want to go searching the site out, you can actually find them all on our show notes. Just search for this episode, and you'll find our show notes and all the links. Okay.
Shall we do a list of five?
Let's do a list of five, goddammit. We're going to give you a list because we were so underwhelmed by the thriller this week that we've decided to give you a list of five great thrillers that you can work on. Now, just a reminder, our lists of five are not top five lists, all right? We would have called them top five lists otherwise. These are just lists of five. Yep. Now, the idea behind these lists is to give you things to watch. Mm-hmm. Things that you might not have seen, things you may have seen a long time ago. Some things are more obvious than other things, but these are... They are ranked in an order, but they are not literally top fives because I don't have a favorite film. I have lots of favorite films, and so it's impossible to tell you what my number one film of all time is, all right? But so what we do is we do a list of five films, which is in this week, and the title will always tell you what it means. This week is five great thrillers, okay? These are thrillers that you can watch that we would say these are films that you should have a look at, okay? All right, so now with that being said... I will start us off this week. I actually set myself two ground rules on this list because I like to set some ground
rules. Let's hear it.
I actually set myself the ground rule straight off the bat because I actually started my list and the first two titles went straight up on the list and I went, oh, that's really obvious. Mm. So I actually have moved Seven and Silence of the Lambs, which I think are both great films, don't get me wrong, and are both would be number one on this list into honorary mentions because they are too obvious.
Look, unless it's a really tight situation like films like cowboy films or something like that, I think people might not have seen those titles. I always pull out the ones that are obvious.
Yeah, so I thought those two in particular were really obvious, so I put them in honorary mentions, okay? Yeah. If you're going to sit there and go, but why are they in honorary mentions? That's why they're in honorary mentions. Not because I don't think they're number one films, all right? It's because they're too obvious. Second ground rule I set myself was I only allowed myself one Hitchcock film. Because Hitchcock made tons of thrillers, and I could easily have made a top five
Funnily enough,
Hitchcock.
I only have one on my list.
There you go. I could have easily made a top five Hitchcock list, easily. I mean, just go all of them, right? Mm. So I said I'm only allowed one. All right.
Yeah.
And I got to say, I actually changed my mind at the last minute on which one it was. And it was because of my lovely wife, Katie, because I put the one on there, which was my obvious choice. And then she goes, what about this one? I went, ooh, that's better. Not that it's a better film, but it's a better one for this list.
Nice.
Okay. So my number five is a film that some of you may or may not have even heard of. Mm-hmm. Before the Wachowski brothers made The Matrix, they made a little known about noir thriller called Bound, starring Gina Gershon and Meg Tilly, about two women who get into basically a pseudo lesbian relationship, and Meg Tilly is actually a mobster's girl, and they plot with each other to basically bring down the mobster, and it's a great little film. It's kind of hard to watch. It's got some very interesting lesbian scenes, but it is a really good film. And you go back and you watch that and you go, now I know why they were given $100 million to make The Matrix. Because this was the film, when they said they wanted to make The Matrix, people said, you never directed before. Mm. So they went off and made this little low-budget thriller, and it's really good. All right? So Bound is my number five. Mm. Your number five.
My number five is a film which you may or may not have seen, but it's one of those films that I think... It's not the best thriller I've seen, but it's one that I want everyone to watch because it's one that at the end of it, you will just feel dirty. You will just feel a little gross. You've seen it. You've definitely seen it.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. What is it?
Because it's such a great journey, which is 8mm. Like, 8mm is... It's not the world's best thriller or anything like this, but watching where he starts and his... perspective of
it's
life.
A grungy film.
Yeah. Well, his perspective on life by the time he hits the end of it is so different that it's just one of those thrillers where I go, look, that wasn't something I would watch regularly, but God damn, that was intense.
It's interesting because another film that I could equate to that sort of grunginess, and I'm sure it's not on your list because I don't think you've seen it yet, but we've talked about it many times, which is William Friedkin's Cruising, which has got that same kind of feel that his perspective as a person is completely different by the end of the film because of the world he's had to live in. And once again, if you feel like you need a shower at the end of it, it's just really grungy. I can't say 8mm is actually one of my favorite films, but its tone...
Again, five great thrillers.
Yeah, five great thrillers. Its tone is solid all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Joel Schumacher actually made that, and it's such an unusual film for him because I'm not a huge Joel Schumacher fan.
But
he has got a couple up his sleeve where you can point and go, you can do it if you are allowed. All right, so... Oh, hello, my notes have disappeared on me. Here we go. All right. My number four is a film, once again, I don't think you've seen, because we talked about it last night, is actually Jagged Edge, which is a Glenn Close, for lack of a better word, courtroom drama. But it's more about the events taking place outside of the courtroom, trying to figure out what is actually going on. It's tight and will keep you guessing. And Mirren and I discussed it. Neither of us, and we're very good at this, could actually pick the ending.
Oh, wow.
So it's actually one of those films which will keep you guessing. As long as you go into it knowing nothing about it, it will keep you guessing. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very interesting film. Worth having a look at. Made in the 80s.
Yeah.
You're number three.
Four, dude.
Four. Oh, you're four. That's right. That was my four. You're
four. That was your four. Yeah.
Four. Whatever.
My number four is a film which I've done a review for on the site, so you can find it there if you look for it, Time Crimes.
I still haven't seen it yet.
This is a recent film that I watched probably less than 6 months ago. But the more I rewatch it, I just get more and more intrigued by the film because it's just, I love films where I can't destroy the logic. It's like the harder I try and pull it apart.
That's what I've been told about it.
Yep.
I've been told it's actually not a, and I finally got my hands on a copy. I just haven't had time to watch it. I've been told it's actually not a particularly brilliant film in the sense of acting or even something. Yeah. But its logic and its time travel aspects are perfect.
Absolutely. And look, I mean, it is tense. It is like razor sharp tense because you know some of the scenes as they play out and you only know certain parts of it. The scenes are even more terrifying because you don't think people are going to do the things that you've seen them already do. And you're like, oh, how are they going to get that to that point? And that it's just, incredibly tense, incredibly well made.
Callisonth has said, does Sin City count or is it too pop? This pop's got nothing to do with it. I actually forgot about Sin City because I actually think of Sin City more as, and it's weird to say this, but I actually think of it more as an experimental film. It's like an art house film.
Yep.
And yes, it does have thriller quality, but it also has action film quality. Yep. It also has drama. I think Sin City is a great film. I really like Sin City. I've seen it many times. But yeah, it's weird. I don't even think about it in this category.
Yeah, no, I don't think about it as a thriller, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, it's very odd. And it definitely has thriller aspects to it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, so Time Crime. I've got to watch it. I finally got a copy. I've got to watch it. My number three is actually a Sherlock Holmes film, but it's a Sherlock Holmes film with a difference. It was actually made in the 80s. And it stars Christopher Plummer as Sherlock Holmes and James Mason as Watson. It's called Murder by Decree, and it's actually an original. It's not actually one of the stories from the novels. And basically it's the idea of Sherlock Holmes going after Jack the Ripper. And it's brutal and it's bloody and it's funny at many times, and the chemistry between them is brilliant, and the film so captures the period and mood. It's such a good film.
What was that one called?
Murder by Decree. And the relationship between Holmes and Watson is just beautiful. It's just lovely. They're such a wonderful couple together. This middle-aged guy, these two middle-aged guys, there's a scene where Watson is trying to eat his last pea on the plate. And he's chasing it around the plate with his fork. It's wonderful. The resolution to that scene, I won't spoil because it is wonderful. You just have to see the film. It is well worth seeing. In the 80s.
Oh, okay.
Early 80s. And it's actually directed...
76, perhaps?
No, it's later than that, I thought. Is it 76?
No, it's not. No, director Robert Moore.
No, no, that's not it. That's not it. I think it's like 80. It could be 79, 80, 81, somewhere along there. James Melbourne is saying 79. I thought it was Without a Clue with Michael Caine. No, it's not the Michael Caine film. Without a Clue is quite a fun film, too. I wouldn't call it
that. I'm using the wonderful Springboard program to find all these and add them to my list of things.
Yes, Murder by Decree. I have a copy on DVD if you'd like to see it.
Well, it's added to my list, so I will no doubt.
Murder by Decree, highly recommended.
Yep.
I think it's directed by Bob Clark from memory, who is a really odd choice for this. I think he went on to do Porky's or something like that. So, no, seriously, it's got a very odd choice of director. No, but it's a very good film. James Milburn is saying 79. It could be 79.
It is 79.
Yeah. I think I saw it in 80. I think by the time it came to Australia, it was 80. So, anyway, good film. Your number three.
My number three is Thanks to Dave, which I bought on DVD and have rewatched again. And it is, of course, Blood Simple.
Ah, oh, great.
Which is just, it's so perfect.
Yeah.
It's just,
I actually kind of suspected it was on your list, so I didn't put it on.
Yeah, like, I mean, Dave was so excited to show me this film. And when you're a film buff and you're talking to a film buff, when they get that excited, you know that it's either going to be one of those ones you will hate them for, or you will just totally get in sync with. And being the fact that it was Coen's, it was one of those films. It's just a sat down.
For those who don't know, it's Coen Brothers' first film. Yeah. First from out of the gate, low budget thriller, really good
stuff. You must watch this film.
Really, really good stuff. I was going to say, you talk about the excitedness. I'm as excited for you to see Murder by Decree.
Oh, well, there you go.
So I might actually invite you over and we'll watch it here. So I'd like to watch it with you. All right, my number two is a thriller that came out. I saw it on VHS. I missed it at the cinema. I saw it on VHS. Blew me away. It is, for the first half of the film, pretty stock standard thriller stuff. The film is made by its last 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And its last 20 minutes I'm not going to give away. But it is a film called Whispers in the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pseudo-erotic thriller. Not a lot of eroticism, but there is a little bit. But it is the film where I got a whole new appreciation of Alan Alda. Now, Alan Alda, I felt, had been treading water for a long time after MASH and been basically doing the same thing. And this was a film where I went, okay, now we're doing something different. In his older years, we're going to do something different. And it is a really, really good powerhouse, last 20 minutes of that film. So well worth having a look at. It's also got a performance by, the star is Annabella Sciorra, who really hasn't done much after. She kind of was a star in the 80s and then disappeared. And I don't know what happened to her. But it's a good film. Really worth having a look at.
Yep.
Your number two.
My number two is Cape Fear.
Yeah, again. I knew that was going to be on your list, too.
Of course it's going to be on my list. Of course. It's one of the greatest films I've ever
seen. That's the remake we're talking about.
This is
about the
remake. Yeah. Look, I've seen both. I do like the original, but it's just so much more tense. It's so much more powerful. It's so much more visceral than the original.
I've actually got it in my honorary mentions.
Yeah. It is just, it's really intensely well made.
We're talking about the Martin Scorsese version, yep. James. James Milburn is asking which one.
De Niro is just,
The scene where he bites the girl's cheek off is, I mean, that in the film, that is probably the first real jump moment in that film where you go, the man is psychotic.
Yeah, no, you know? And that's the thing. He is as far as you can push a human to be psychotic. Yes.
But at the same time, justified.
Yeah, exactly. And so grounded as well, which is the problem.
Yeah.
It's very intense.
Yeah, no, it's a good film. We actually covered it quite heavily in a previous list, which I'm trying to remember what
it was
for.
It's coming up on mine. I think I've got two or three on that.
Yeah,
one,
we may have to vault it soon. I actually didn't put it into the one to fives because I knew it was coming up on yours. I knew it. All right, my number one film is the Hitchcock film, which is Dial M for Murder.
Enough a Hitchcock film at the start, at the top of mine as well.
Well, there you go. And I think I know which one you picked, too. So, and I think the one you picked is the one I took off. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, okay. So I think I took it off because this one came up. This is the Grace Kelly film, which was remade A Perfect Murder with Michael Douglas, which is shit. Don't bother looking at it. The original Dial M for Murder was the only film, in fact, that was shot in 3D by Hitchcock. Little known fact. A lot of people don't know that Hitchcock actually did shoot a 3D film. Mm. But like all the good 3D films, it was never gimmicky. He did it in 3D just for the depth to the screen. Mm. And when you watch it in 2D, you don't lose anything.
Yeah.
It is a great film all about double dealings, double crossings, and plans that just don't quite go right. There's no such thing as the perfect crime.
Mm.
Very, very good film. All right, your number one?
My number one is Rear Window.
Oh, it's not the one I thought it was going to be.
What did you think it was?
I thought it was going to be North by Northwest, which was my original.
No, because towards the end of that film, I feel like it's not, like I've never felt, like it's almost action-y.
Yeah, it's still that espionage thriller thing going on there, which is, I actually had it on my list, because North by Northwest is actually my favorite Hitchcock film. But when Dial M for Murder came up, it was kind of like, that does fit the thriller mold more. But yours is also very good. Go on.
Yeah. Look, Rear Window is one of those great films where it's shot with the long distance. It has a great cast to it.
Terrific film.
And it's just the whole time, it just drags you into his seat. Like, you are just stuck with him in that room watching everything transpire. And it's like, even though, like, Test of Time, it comes back to it. It's like some films, like as an example, Cape Fear, in my opinion, needs to bow down to the new
one. The one thing that the original Cape Fear has that the second film tries and gets to a degree right, but, and once again, it says a comment on our chat room says it's bound by age. James from Melbourne says it's bound by age. And that bounding, that being bound by its age actually did benefit it for one thing, which is there is a suppressed undercurrent of sexuality that's that just flows through the original because they couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't show it. They couldn't they couldn't put a release on it. So it's got this steaming undercurrent of sexuality below it between Robert Mitchum and the wife and stuff like that. Scorsese's doesn't quite have that, but it goes in another direction and takes you to a point, takes you to a place where you couldn't go with the original, and to its benefit, it
but
couldn't go.
That's what I mean. Yeah. And it's like, you couldn't go there at first. You can go there now, and it's almost like it can go one of two ways when you do that. It can either go that way, or it can just absolutely fall apart.
Or it could be like a kettle, like you last night, letting off steam, where it just goes, pssst, you know, and it just go, it fizzes out. Cape Fear didn't, luckily.
Exactly. Whereas Rear Window, to me, and we won't talk about the disgusting attempt at trying to remake.
Well, I was about to say, no, we will talk about that, because that's a perfect example where the remake failed.
Yeah,
because
even though it went, it tried to do exactly what Cape Fear did. It tried to make it more
intense. And even though it's not technically a remake, and they say they never once tell you it's based on, and they're trying not to be a remake, Disturbia is, for all intents and purposes, a remake of Rear Window. It follows the same plot.
Exactly. You know?
And instead they put teeny boppers in there, and it doesn't work.
Exactly. Whereas, and Rear Window, the other great thing about it is, it holds the test of time for me because it's about the menace to the situation and about the menace of the character, not about what he does. And in that opinion, even when I rewatch it now, because I have it, I own it on DVD.
Me too.
Even when I rewatch it now, I still feel a chilling sense of fear when he is wandering around the house and you are watching through the camera. And it's like, I know the ending now. Doesn't change it for me.
Yeah.
And it's like, if it can handle that, it must be a fantastic film.
Absolutely. Let's talk for a second. I know we're pushed for time and we're at the end of the show, but let's just talk for 1 second. Oh, actually, before we do this, let me just throw out some honorary mentions here. As I said, Silence of the Lambs and Seven are two must-see thrillers. There's just no debate. There's no question. All right. I also have Buried, which I actually quite liked. I know you were a bit lukewarm on it, but I actually quite liked Buried. I also have Basic Instinct, which is high camp, but has some really interesting stuff in it. Don't do the sequel, whatever you do. Fatal Attraction, the Glenn Close film with Michael Douglas, I actually quite liked as well. I have Cape Fear. And, of course, I also second, I think, every film you had on your list. So those are some honorary mentions we'll just throw out there. But let's just talk for a second about Hitchcock, because we've both got Hitchcock as our number one films. I think it is worth talking.
I know we both anguished over which one to pick.
Yeah, absolutely. My lovely wife, Katie, actually said to me once many years ago, because she hasn't seen very many Hitchcock films, and she actually said to me, what makes Hitchcock so brilliant? Why is it he is still held in such regard? Why is it he is still the master of suspense? Why is it he is still, you know, revered so much? And I came up with a conclusion, and I just wanted to run this past you, because I haven't actually thought about this for years, but I thought I'd just run this by you really quickly. And I said to her at the time, and I still stand by this, I think it is because Hitchcock was the ultimate experimental filmmaker.
Yep.
He was attempting things that nobody else had tried, and he's been often copied on everything. He was fearless in basically saying, let's just do this, and making...
But he also had a good eye for the things that wouldn't work.
And lastly, he also would take you to territory where other people feared to tread. And in the day. Nowadays, people tread that territory all the time. But you got to think, back in the 50s and 60s, to do things like Rear Window, to do things like, let's go to some of his black and whites, and to do things like Suspicion or what's that film where he's in the loony bin, which is one of my favorites of his films, and I've completely blanked on the name of the film. I'll come back to it. But with the Salvador Dali painting, and my mind has gone blank as to what it's called. But he does these films where he sits there and go, wow, I would not have thought anybody would have had the balls to do something like that at the time. His own repressions as a person would come flowing out in these seethingly weird, suppressed sex fantasies, such as having the girl knifed in the shower naked, which at the time was shocking, you know, absolutely shocking, even though you never really see anything, you know. The vertigo effect, that triple reverse zoom shot where you zoom a camera forward while dollying backwards at the same time to change perspective, which is so often used in films today, was created by Hitchcock, was to give that sense of vertigo in the film Vertigo. You know, I'm sure his DOP looked at him and said, "You're nuts."
His eye was a giant camera.
It was.
The man just knew. He would almost record these really intense moments or really intense thoughts that he would have and just commit them down in a visual sense. And he could really handle that like no other person. Not that no other person ever has. A lot of people have, and a lot of people have done these things and moved on with. But it's one of those things. It's going back to where it all started. In the same way that all of the best artists or musicians or whatever will always return to the roots of music, and will always return to the point where everything started. It's like all the best bands along the way have always done this thing where they get to a three-quarter point in the history and then they go back and revisit or go back and change what they define music as. And it's the same thing. People will look at Hitchcock because he is the starting of everything that changed cinema.
Callisynth also made a very good point in our chat room where he says he also had the advantage of being in an age where you could be experimental and not shunned by the mainstream, is such a good point. Mm. The film I'm trying to remember, by the way, I've just brought Hitchcock up here really quickly. Spellbound. That's the film I'm trying to think of. Thank you. God, my mind just went blank. Thank you, IMDb. Spellbound had Gregory Peck in it and Ingrid Bergman, and basically about a guy who shows up at a loony bin, basically, who is the new doctor in the loony bin and all this sort of stuff. And as the film starts to pan out, you start to realize that he's not who he says he is. And he is actually probably just a little bit loopy in his own right, you know? And it's a wonderful film. It's actually one of the... When people sit there and say, what Hitchcock should I watch? And I sit there and go, okay, if you've never watched Hitchcock before, then there's probably 5 or 6 films that are... He made 51 films or 50 films or something like that. But there's really a small selection of the classic Hitchcocks. Psycho is definitely one of the classics. Rear Window is definitely one of the classics. Trouble with Harry is his foray into black comedy, and it's terrific. To Catch a Thief, North by Northwest,
The Birds,
Lifeboat, Vertigo, Frenzy is another one of his thrillers that he made, the 60s thriller Frenzy. And then you go back to some of his black and whites. You go back to Suspicion, Notorious, Spellbound, the Paradine Case, and of course Dial M for Murder. And you sit and go, these are like the classic Hitchcocks, you know? Rope, of course. I forgot about Rope. Rope is also good. So there's about 10 of them. Okay, so there's about 10 that you can sit there and go, these are must-sees. Anything else you see after that is gravy. And it was funny because Hitchcock even remade some of his old silent films. You go back to Saboteur, he remade that twice because he made that as a silent film, and then he came back and did it as a talkie later on. And he did that with a couple of films because he had been directing for years. The only film I would actually say to you that is, I can actually honestly say, is terrible Hitchcock is his last film. And I really do suggest that you don't watch his last film, because it's kind of like Kubrick's last film with Eyes Wide Shut. You sit there and go, you were obviously sick when you made this, and your heart's not in it, and it doesn't work. And that's a film called Family Plot, which he made in the 70s. And it's not very good. You know, and you sit there and go, it's a sad ending to what was a stellar career. you know. So yeah, Hitchcock is definitely worth going. Boy, that was an impromptu little Hitchcock worship fest. But I think it's important. There's a lot of people who haven't seen Hitchcock, and he really is a great filmmaker who really did cross a lot of boundaries in his day, and he told some really entertaining stories. And there's so many people go, oh, you know, Psycho, Frenzy, The Birds. We forget that he also had a great sense of humor. Very dark, but a great sense of humor. Yeah. North by Northwest is very funny in places. To Catch a Thief is very funny in places. There's some great humor even in Rope because of the relationship between these two guys, you know? Worth having a look at Hitchcock stuff. We might even do a Hitchcock special at some point, I think, where we talk about some of his all-time greats, I think, because it gives us a chance to go and relive some of these films as well. I
can't wait to sit down and do a freaking Hitchcock fest.
I think I watched Spellbound about 10 times in the space of like a month, because it was one of the early videos that I bought, and I just watched it a lot. The reason for people who are going, why Spellbound in particular? Spellbound, Hitchcock actually, when I talk about him being an experimental filmmaker, there are two shots in Spellbound. A, there's the middle dream sequence, which was actually designed by Salvador Dali. So you can imagine what that looks like. But there are two shots in particular, because Hitchcock liked to experiment, where at one point he's talking to Ingrid Bergman, the camera is a POV shot of Ingrid Bergman, so it's looking at his eyes. Yeah. And he's got a glass of milk. And in the middle of her delivering lines to him, he takes a drink of the milk. But, of course, it never leaves the POV shot. So what you end up with is this glass of milk comes up into camera shot and tilts up, and you're actually looking at her through the bottom of the glass. Mm. You know, you sort of go, what kind of shot is that? You know, and the other shot is the big conclusion at the end where the guy pulls his handgun and he's kind of going backwards and forwards between the people in the room as to who he's going to shoot. And so the camera cuts to, once again, a POV shot, and there's this big hand with a big gun in the middle of frame, like a first-person shooter of this gun kind of going like this around the room. And you think, what drugs are you on at this point, Mr. Hitchcock? But it's great. It was just fantastic, you know? And it's stuff like that where you sit there and you watch Hitchcock films just because you're going, what will you do next, you know? Very interesting. Very interesting man. He was a very disturbed man, but very interesting man. Very interesting films. Right, we're going to wrap this up, guys. Thank you for listening to our little rant about Hitchcock. But I just think it's interesting that even with our age difference, because Josh and I do have a massive age difference, we both end up with a Hitchcock film.
He's really old.
I'm really old. I am very old. All right. Agree or disagree with anything we had to say today? If you actually liked Unknown, tell us why. We'd love to know why. We won't change our minds, but we'd love to know why. Or if you just have something to say, you want to say hi to us, whatever, send your feedback to feedback@geekactually.com. Drop us a voicemail, 02-801-13167. Or remember, you can also do that just via Skype to Skype. Our Skype ID is geekactually, all one word. Merchandise, fan pages, Twitter, Tumblr accounts, all the various things. This is some of our merchandise right here on camera. Merchandise, anything like that. You want to find out anything about us, go to geekactually.com. There's a follow us link on the side of the page. All the addresses of all the various things we do is there, including our personal Twitter accounts and so forth. And remember, you can watch this show live every Saturday. It follows the Geek Actually show, so there is no set start time. It's usually about an hour and a half after our start, which is at 12 o'clock roughly-ish. So about 1:30-ish is our kind of start time. We do two shows back-to-back. We start typically recording all of our stuff at 12 p.m., so figure it out from there. Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time, UTC plus 11, geekactually.com/live. And also, if you do want to know more about our Geek Actually show, do look for that as well. It's kind of a revamped show. It's tech, it's geek, it's geekdom, it's weird food, it's all sorts of nonsense.
It's everything that is awesome about geeks.
If you're a geek, you should be listening to Geek Actually. You can find that on iTunes or on geekactually.com, of course. We also have some friends that we like to always do our shout outs to. WeekendRonan.com is the home of the Real Junkies, R-E-E-L Junkies. They are a podcast like us that does movie reviews, but they like to drink a bit of tequila while doing it. And why not indeed, I would say.
Right.
And one quarter of their team, Fox4649, was on our Tron special recently, which you can also find on our Film Actually feed. You also might want to tune in or listen to Rachel over at the Funky Film Show. She's on Thursday nights, Radio Fremantle 107.9 FM, or you can find past show on radiofremantle.com. She's a regular listener of ours, which is very good. So I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And Josh, I believe you are involved in another podcast.
Yep. RawDLC.com. It's a gaming website. Come check us out. We do a live show. It goes out on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. It is about gaming, so come there if you are interested in gaming. We also have a bunch of special things planned over the next few weeks.
There you go. Okay. That was short.
Thank you, James from Melbourne, who says, Raw DLC, it's the gaming tits.
It's the gaming tits. We're going to get that t-shirt made. Josh says,
I just want the sticker made up, and then we'll go from there.
We got bumper stickers. We can make bumper stickers in Cafe Press. Yeah, we can do that. All right, we'll organize that. We got to get the photo of you going like this first. All right, so I think that's it. We've got just a quick shout out to Josh Spencer over at attackninja.blogspot.com. He's a cartoonist and an artist, and he did our cover arts, and we love him for that. Thank you very much. Don't forget, for all you movie lovers out there, that we have our post-Oscar show, which will be Monday afternoon. I don't have a set start time yet, because it'll be whenever the Oscars finish. So it'll be pretty much within the half hour after the finish of the live Oscar show. So just keep checking back with us. We will tweet out when we're starting anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think that's it. I don't think I have anything else we need to push, do we?
Nope.
Arbiter? Did you want to talk about Arbiter?
Oh, yes. Arbiter. It's a gaming magazine. Gaming magazine?
No, it's not a gaming magazine.
It's a geek magazine. which
has
is
games
available
in it.
Yeah, it does have games in it. It's a geek magazine, which is launched from geekactually.com. You can subscribe in the top right-hand corner. Also, just type into the search field Arbiter for now until we fix it up. That's where you can find the latest two issues. And after five issues, we are stopping the on-screen posting, and you will have to get it via the subscription.
So it's only three more issues. So three more. And then it's only to the subscribers. So make sure you get in your subscription. And somebody said the other day they couldn't find it on our website. All right. First of all, I'm not going to bag you out and say you're blind. But I will say, if you go to our website and you're looking at our website, okay, so you're looking at the website, not from the website's point of view, you're looking at the website, very top right-hand corner, looking at the page. So looking at it, here on the right is a box that says subscribe.
All right. Yes, but maybe they're trying to fund the magazine.
In that case, go one notch down on the sidebar and you'll see it says categories. Click on that and a drop down will happen. And the very first listing on that drop down says Arbiter. Click on that and it'll bring up all posts relating to Arbiter, which happens to be two, and it's two issues. All right. Those are the easy ways to find it. All right. So, all right. That being said, get used to the subscription box, though, because that will be the only thing there after the fifth issue.
Yep.
All right. So with all that being said, we're going to now. I couldn't get the soundtrack to Unknown. It is available, but I didn't get it in time. John Ottman composed the soundtrack, though, so I thought this week we'll just go out with some John Ottman music. Okay, so I couldn't find the soundtrack, so this isn't the soundtrack to Unknown, but in the show notes I will list, because I haven't actually got it lined up yet, I will list what track it is and what film it's from, but it will be composed by John Ottman. Alright, so our closing music today for our audio listeners will be a track from John Ottman. Okay, with that being said, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies, and we will see you all next week. Bye now.
Bye.